Call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:23 a.m. on this Thursday, April 28th, 2022. I want to thank our House Records Secretary, Emma Turner, Kieran Polson-Edwards, and our LIO moderator, Emma Turner, for all they do here for our committee. As we start, I want to remind committee members to please silence your cell phones. And present today, we have Representative Tuck, Representative Klayman, Representative Fields, and Representative Kaufman, myself, Chair Schrage. Representative Zelkowski has been previously excused. And today, we will be bringing House Bill 301, Renewable Portfolio Standard, back before the committee. We'll consider committee member amendments and then look for the will of the committee. The committee received 11 amendments for HB 301. There are two packets of amendments. We have a packet of traditional amendments that are from Ledge Legal. There will also be a couple of conceptual amendments. I believe those have been withdrawn. But regardless, in case you're wondering what's in front of you today, that's what you have. We will work through the traditional amendment packet first and go from there. Do we have any questions or comments from committee members before we get started? Not seeing any. The first amendment is from myself. It's a technical amendment to fix a drafting error, so I'm going to move amendment number one.
And I'll object for discussion.
And we've got an objection for discussion. I'm going to invite my chief of staff, Mr. Ryan Johnston, to the table to explain amendment number one for us. Mr. Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff representative Calvin Trogge. So amendment number one begins on page 7, line 11. When the committee substitute was done, there was some changes made to the credit system. And if you give me some leeway, Mr. Chair, just to talk through the credit system, just since we had to speed through the summary of changes on Tuesday. So the previous credit system was restricted only to the rail belt, and the credits were only traded on the rail belt itself. So now the new credit system is broadened to include the entire state of Alaska. So when the CS was done, the language you have before you was inadvertently left in from the previous version. And from the testimony on Tuesday, it was clear that this created more confusion than it created clarity. So the language, lines 11 through 13 are being deleted to ensure that there's clarity that the credits themselves do not need to be produced on the rail belt. They can be produced in rural Alaska in any of our small communities. And then those credits will be sold and bought between the rail belt utilities and then our small rural power producers, thus allowing for the credit system to be statewide.
Very good. Questions or discussion from committee members?
Question.
Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Johnston, just wondering, does this in any way, act as a transfer from the rail belt to rural or vice versa?
Through the chair, Ryan Johnson, through the chair, Representative Kaufman, yes, absolutely. Because in the bill, that it's determined that the credits will be built off of a 1 megawatt hour. So it's essentially, rail belt utilities will be buying the rights to the renewable energy resource in rural Alaska. So they'll pay that rural power utility for the rights to that, which then would be added into their aggregate net sales to then be counted towards the clean energy standard now that we have it. So, yes, it does create a relationship between our rural power producers and the rail belt utilities in an economic sense.
Thank you.
Representative Field.
Could I just comment on that?
Please.
Through the chair to Representative Kaufman, I thought this was a good addition because if we've got 50 potential projects out there, but the highest return in terms of cost savings on fuel or in rural Alaska, let's do those. So I think it's, it looks at the whole state and brings benefits beyond the rail belt. So I appreciate the inclusion.
Further discussion? Is the objection maintained?
Nope.
Is there further objection? With no further objection, amendment number one has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number two by Representative Fields. Representative Fields, would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment two.
I'll object for discussion.
Representative Fields, would you explain your amendment?
Sure. I think the context here is I really appreciate the chairman's hard work on this bill. And consideration of input from a lot of stakeholders. And this amendment, I wrote this amendment as I learned more about the existing generation sources within different service areas. And I think we have sort of a unique situation where coal does provide a significant amount of electricity within GVEA, but coal doesn't provide electricity, or coal generating stations and coal mines are not situated within MEA or within Chugach's service area or Homer or Seward. So we have some regional variation. My understanding is that within GVA, coal supplies about 42% of the electricity. Obviously, coal does produce carbon emissions. At the same time, it is a relatively affordable and certainly very reliable energy source in the interior. So one of the things, and by the way, I think the company that runs the use of Belly Coal Mine has provided good jobs for a long time and supported people in Healy. They're the best jobs in that region, and they're important economically. So I do support an RPS. At the same time, I didn't want to advance a policy that at any point over the time horizon would lose a single job from the use of Belly Coal Mine, because again, I think these jobs are important. So what this amendment does is it says when we go to an 80% RPS, that 80% will be a rail belt wide standard, not a regional standard. So when you look at the RPS targets, the first two are both regional and ERO wide. This amendment would turn the 80% into an ERO wide target. So in theory, you could have higher renewable deployment in some of the utility service areas south of GVEA, and you could have, say, 55% renewable energy deployment within GVEA, thereby protecting every single job at the use of Belly Coal Mine. So that's the intent of the amendment. I think given the regional variation in the state, it makes sense. And I think given the our interest in reliability of supply, it makes sense. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments from committee members? Representative Kaufman?
Through the chair, so just to clarify, so the intent is to provide flexibility within the entire rail belt, not just and prevent that applicability only to a region within the rail belt.
Absolutely, yes. Through the chair, absolutely. Maybe we develop a ton of renewable energy that is highly efficient in a certain region. It's not within the GVEA. It might not be within a Homer. It might not be within a Chugach service area. That's fine. Reaching, you know, once we reach that very high percentage of 80, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't really matter where the renewable energy is generated and consumed. It matters that we reach that ERO-wide 80% target.
Representative Tuck, did I see you trying to get in the queue?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
Further discussion or questions? What are you waiting for?
Well, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative Tuck.
And the inclusion of this amendment actually kind of makes an argument for a future amendment. So but I don't want to bring that up until we get to that other amendment. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Is the objection maintained, Representative Klayman?
No.
Is there further objection from committee members? Not hearing any. Amendment number 2 has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 3 by myself. I will move amendment number 3. And is there an objection for discussion?
Object for purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman, and I'd like to turn things over to my Chief of Staff, Ryan Johnston, to please walk us through Amendment Number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ryan Johnston, staff for Representative Trage. So on Tuesday, there was some testimony about unified transmission rates and wheeling rates. And when we reached out to one of the utilities to talk about this, there were some concerns expressed from the Homer area about the possibility of pancaking is the technical term I believe was used. And essentially it's the stacking of tariffs as renewable energy would move from one utility to the next. So using Homer as an example, if Homer had a lot of hydro potentially and GVA wanted to use some of that hydropower, it would have to travel essentially through two other utilities before reaching the end use. So, this amendment pushes or asks the ERO to develop a unified transmission rate for all of the utilities. So essentially there's a a unified rate across the rail belt for only under this amendment would be only for the clean energy standard and the renewable energy covered by the renewable energy standard.
Questions or comments from committee members? Not seeing any. Is the objection maintained, Representative Kaufman?
I remove my objection.
Is there further objection? Not seeing any. Amendment number 3 has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 4 by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number 4.
Objection. For discussion. And Representative Kaufman, would you please explain your amendment?
Thank you. The intent of this amendment, it removes the statement for a period of 10 years starting when construction begins to simply say is exempt from state lease fees. The purpose of this is that these are circular fees, essentially. The only ones who can pay the fees are the ratepayers, and so why would we be essentially taxing ourselves with the lease after 10 years? Thank you.
Guys, a question.
Representative Fields.
Thanks to the Chair, Representative Kaufman. Thanks for this amendment. As the bill goes to Labor and Commerce next, I was thinking about either lengthening or just eliminating the 10-year period. What are your thoughts on doubling it to 20 years versus just eliminating the lease fees entirely? Thanks.
Thank you. Through the Chair to Representative Fields. With this, we're just deleting it. So that's the thought. I can't imagine why anything would be different in 10 years than it is would be the day it's being built.
Further questions or discussion from committee members? Is the objection maintained?
No.
Is there further objection? All right, lightening the work for Labor and Commerce. Amendment number 4 has been adopted.
And we're acting like the Senate.
I don't know what to think of that comment. That brings us to amendment number 5 by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number 5.
All right.
I'll object for discussion.
Representative Kaufman, would you please explain your amendment?
Thank you. The insertion of this new subsection on page 5 following line 8, the commission shall monitor the effect of the clean energy standard on rates and reliability to determine whether the effect is consistent with the public interest. The goal there is to keep the commission in the saddle as far as assuring that what we're doing continues to be in the public interest, which, in the end, serving the best interests of the ratepayers, which is where all this goes in the end. Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, Representative Fields.
And is Ledge Legal online?
Ledge Legal, I do not believe, is online, but we do have Mr. Pickett with the RCA as well would you like to go to Mr. Pickett with the question?
Yes. So through the chair, Mr. Pickett, I think I support the intent of this, which is the RCA monitoring the effect of the clean energy standard on rates and reliability. I just want to make sure that we aren't unintentionally giving the RCA basically veto authority to stop implementation of the RPS at some point in time. So I guess I would just check with you, Mr. Pickett, is it your reading that this amendment doesn't tell the RCA, hey, you can just stop implementation of the RPS, but it is, you know, monitoring and getting back to legislature in terms of, you know, continued adherence to a policy that's in the public interest? Thanks.
Mr. Pickett, could you please respond?
Yes, through the chair. I think the key question is going to be, what sort of rate impacts are you actually talking about? Because it's going to be a matter of degree, realistically. And this language, I think I understand the intent, but it's nonspecific in that. Or is there a rate impact that is of concern to the legislature?
If I follow up.
Follow-up.
And so I guess my advice would be the more specificity, the better.
Hmm. Representative Fields, follow up.
Thanks to Mr. Pickett and maybe to Representative Kaufman. I mean, as I read this, I see it as the RCA is going to monitor the impact that the clean energy standard has on rates and reliability and then tell us, the legislature, if the RCA's observation is that this continues to be in the public interest as it is implemented. It is not my reading of it that this gives the RCA authority to stop implementing an RPS.
I would tend to agree with that.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett.
And Representative Kaufman, is that consistent with your intent as well?
Thank you. Through the chair to Rep. Fields, yes, there would still be the statute. So uh, So, but it, what it does is raises the alarm or at least notification that, hey, this is not working in terms of what job one is, which is reliability and also linked with rates.
Thanks for that. I don't think I have an, personally, I don't have an objection to it. Thank you.
Okay. And I actually have a question as well. I'm just kind of curious, maybe to Mr. Pickett, how do you interpret this amendment as far as your duties or obligations? The word monitor, I'm just, is this on a yearly basis? Actually, let's first go to Representative Kaufman. I mean, what are we expecting to do with this monitoring? Are they reporting once a year? What does this mean in your view?
I would say that's to be determined, but at a minimum, it would be notification. If you look at, you know, the failure of clean or green energy standards, sometimes it's when you get into a train wreck of where the tech is not quite up to the task and the reliability is not there, the rates are high for whatever reason. And as we move forward, the selling point of these technologies is that they're not only cleaner, but that they're also more economical. And they're equally reliable is the goal. So we want to be sure that we're focused on the actual performance goals of this technology, and we're not just off on a crusade because of ideology of implementation, but we're actually focused on function.
Mr. Pickett, could I get you to maybe address what you would see the RCA's obligation or duties under this amendment?
Through the chair, the first step would be for the RCA to begin a rulemaking process that would actually implement the details of this. That would include the frequency of reporting and the types of metrics that would be evaluated. And that's a very open public process.
Okay, very good. Thank you for that response. Representative Tuck and then Representative Klayman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the amendment sponsor's explanation. When there's a lot of feel-good stuff that around energy that sometimes just doesn't perform, but doesn't mean that we shouldn't be testing it and trying it. And in testing and trying it, we need to have some reliable feedback, some good feedback. And I think this amendment helps do that. And I appreciate Mr. Pickett's comments as well, saying that there will be a rulemaking process. This is broad enough right now that we don't have to define it. And they're the experts. They know what they're doing. And so they'll get the regulations written around that. I think is going to be good process and really good policy for us. So we have those checks and balances to make sure we're going the right direction and actually saving ratepayers and actually applying technologies properly and actually getting the results that we hope for. Thank you.
Very good. Any further? Representative Klayman.
I think this is a question for I'll start with Mr. Pickett. Mr. Pickett, one way of reading this amendment would almost be to say, as long as the clean energy standard is consistent with the public interest, you wouldn't have anything to report. And then if there's a determination made that it's no longer in the public interest, at that point, the RCA would have some duty to report and say, well, it started out as being in the public interest. Now it's not. Do you read this amendment as providing some different duties on RCA? I understand there's a rulemaking, but do you see that as different?
I think the key as the standard, if it does get passed into law, is that obviously is going to be one key component of what is defined as the public interest. Many times, and in some statutes, the public interest just is not well defined, and then that sort of lands upon the commission to determine what it believes the public interest is in that particular matter. But obviously, reliability and rates tends to narrow the field of inquiry and what are the important factors to be looking at.
And then a follow-up
actually for the amendment sponsor, Representative Kaufman, does this, following up on that, do you agree that the commission would be responsible for coming up by the rulemaking to determine what the public interest is for purposes of this duty that we're creating for them?
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Klayman. Yes, the goal is to really set, you know, there's two very high level metrics, which is reliability and rates, the things that really we all care about. And for them to find a way to implement that. So that would be with their rulemaking, the specifics and what they have to do in order to reliably determine the performance relative to those two high level metrics.
Okay. Thank you. Further discussion from committee members? And let the record reflect that Representative Rauscher joined us at 10:44 a.m. Welcome. Good to have you here. Let's take a brief at ease. All right, back on the record. So I would like to jump into the queue just really quickly. Another question for Mr. Pickett. So at looking at amendment number 5 and following up on Representative Klayman's question on consistent with the public interest, you said that the inclusion of rates and reliability in this text offered in this amendment kind of limits the scope of what that public interest determination is. My only hesitation on this amendment is that we have heard from a number of the utilities that there is a concern that this renewable portfolio standard or clean energy standard will negatively impact rates and reliability. And it seems to me that their conclusion is that it's not in the public interest. And I'm just kind of curious how, if you could further define how the RCA would look at public interest, because I think part of what this bill hopes to do is express that there is a public interest in having a cleaner energy portfolio. And I'm just wondering how that would be taken into consideration when looking at this amendment and weighing that against the rates and reliability. Can you potentially provide some further insight onto that, Mr. Pickett?
Well, again, the devil is going to be in the details about what the final regulation comes out as. And that's going to be a process where we're going to have strong advocates of clean energy and the utility participation. And in terms of the impact on rates, now, obviously, if it had a 30 or 40% impact on rates, that's one concern. If it's a much milder sort of impact, and we're in the process of having an electric reliability organization stood up after, 7 years of effort and with the help of the legislature. And so they're going to play a key role in trying to determine the most cost-effective way forward. And if we do have a clean energy standard, reliability to me personally is very, very important. And, we have some outages, but by and large, our electric system is fairly reliable. If, in fact, things start to emerge, I can't give you a specific percentage or anything of that nature, but it definitely will be a factor that we'll have to weigh into it. And again, the frequency of reporting to the legislature, and whether that's on an annual basis or, reports to the appropriate body semi-annually, I don't know. because the legislature will be made aware of the impact.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. And Representative Kaufman, I believe you wanted to respond.
Thank you. I guess to the chair in this case and the committee. One of the key things to driving any sort of change is the process of change management, of being sure that you've considered the impacts of the changes that you want to make. This is a huge change. So, again, keeping an eye towards good change management, you have to steer by your most important metrics, rates and reliability, with reliability being number one. Power's no good if it's not on. And then what you're paying for it, those are top-line metrics. And if we have a guidestone for all this, the cleanliness of our energy source is important. But in a place like Alaska, the reliability and the cost is a key metric. So the intent of the entire body of legislation is cleaner energy, but we have to steer reliably towards the two key metrics, which are cost and reliability, as we make these changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion from committee members? Representative Fields.
I think there's a better way to write this, but personally I'm comfortable adopting it and trying to refine it, you know, over the next few days, working with Representative Kaufman and the RCA.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The RCA, I would have, if I may, say this, my opinion of them has always been more of a consumer protection agency. It really has been. When you look at monopolies that we're allowed, or loose monopolies of utilities, which you have to have a buffer to make sure that those monopolies, because you can't have multiple transmission lines going or multiple distribution lines going into your neighborhoods and into your homes. You got to allow for a single system. And so having those loose monopolies, you have to have that consumer protection, which is what the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is all about. It's making sure we strike that balance. I've watched over the years with different utilities, whether it's natural gas, electric, garbage, any of those utilities, on how their process of notifying the public and getting all those involved as much as they can get involved. They do a very good job at it. They really do. They're really proactive in that area of their responsibilities. And oftentimes when we start looking at new technologies, or we look at renewable energy, you know, we think of it as just kind of a nifty thing to do, more than we are looking at the full impacts of applying those technologies, or the lack of sustainability in some of these technologies. When we started with looking at individual projects through the legislature, for example, the geothermal that was going down, I think it was King Salmon area, somewhere down there, I think it was King Salmon, or Naknak, I think it might have been Naknak, that was it. But anyway, in that area, I thought it was a very viable project, but that's what was being sold to me. It wasn't until we came up with a renewable energy grant program and having experts take a look at this and look into it, they realized, no, that was not a good program. They went on it on their own and ended up failing. And had we not had the expertise there, if we had not had a filtration system, if you will, to look at whether this was a viable project or not, the legislature could have made a big mistake, like we have with grain silos, like we have with seafood plants and everything else. I do have a lot of confidence in the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. They are looking at reliability. They are looking at cost. They're looking at sustainability. And if we start getting in too much deeper than this, I worry that we'll make things more difficult for them, when really they do have a good rulemaking process as it is right now. I feel pretty confident with it. And so as the amendment stands right now, I'm good with it.
Okay. Further discussion? Is the objection maintained?
Nope.
Is there further objection? Hearing none, Amendment number 5 has been adopted. That brings us to Amendment number 6 by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
I move Amendment number 6.
Object for discussion. Representative Kaufman, would you please explain your amendment?
this amendment, which essentially deletes the verbiage, a fine paid by a load-serving entity under the section may be included or recovered in rates paid by the load-serving entity's customers, is just a nod towards reality, as how else will it be paid? What other source would there be? Thank you.
Further, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Chairman Shiragi. I might ask you or your staff to explain what our options are here and what the trade-offs are.
Representative Johnston, would you like to take a first stab at, or excuse me, Chief of Staff Johnston, would you like to take the first stab at that one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the demotion immediately. so currently, Ryan Johnston, staff representative, Shiragi, for the record. So in our conversations with the utilities right now, that they are very limited in the capacity outside of the ratepayers. So I believe when we talked with one utility, it was 2% of their income came from other sources. So that's just anecdotally from one utility. Potentially, Mr. Pickett might be able to give a better answer, but there was a conversation surrounding the how restricted this language would be on the fines and present issues for the utilities.
Further discussion, Representative Field.
Maybe I'll just ask Mr. Pickett.
You didn't get your answer yet, did you?
Oh, that started to answer the question. If I could just ask Mr. Pickett, it seems to me that it could be a distinction without a difference. Ultimately, those of us who are ratepayers are going to pay if we fail to reach the goals and we need to reach them. Is that kind of your understanding, Mr. Pickett?
Through the chair, you know, with the structure we have in the rail belt with the electric utilities being co-ops, it's going to come from the co-op ratepayers or the co-op members in the form of some type of capital credit contribution. So, yeah, it's the same people. And I would agree with the statement that was made earlier that it's a very small percentage that comes from other sources. And many times when they do have those other sources, they are restricted themselves.
Thank you.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is a question for Mr. Pickett. So I know that utilities have to apply for rate increases, and some things are allowed and are permissible into readjusting rate increases, and other items are not. As the bill stands right now, this would fall into an area where the fines would not be allowed for rate increases. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's my understanding.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Pickett. And then follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Can you give us some other examples of items that may be overhead to a utility that are not allowed for rate increases?
Well, certainly some of the obvious ones, we don't allow them to include lobbying expenses in there, or things that are probably more of a personal benefit to perhaps utility employees. But I think the key test is the rates cover both services and capital expenditures that are necessary, used and useful in providing electric service. That's the real test.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if there are items that are of a personal benefit, from what I hear, is that those items, for example, lobbying, as you mentioned, are not allowed for a rate increase. So if a utility decides to do something unilaterally, which is causes them to break a fine, there might be some personal benefit in that. Actually, you know, I don't have a question right now, Mr. Chair. I'm just kind of rationalizing it in my head a little bit and speaking out loud. So at this time, I won't ask a question, but I have to think about this a little bit further. Thank you.
Okay, I've got Representative Kaufman, then Klayman, then Fields, then Rauscher. Representative Kaufman.
I'll pass and wait.
Okay, so Representative Klayman.
This is for Mr. Pickett, and it's follow-up on, I think, the line of questioning started by Rep. Tuck. So as the current structure, if I'm if I'm Chugach Electric, one of the cooperatives, and the RCA fines Chugach Electric for something that it did, and we, my family are Chugach shareholders, you cannot put that fine into the rates that I pay for electricity. I got that right?
Yeah, that would be correct. But in the case of a co-op, you have the capital credits, which are actually belong to the co-op members.
Right. So what if I want to think about it more in a more traditional, if we're in a co-op, which I know we have co-ops, but if this was a for-profit energy company and that company was fined, they couldn't put that fine into the rates, but the stockholders would see a reduction in their dividends, a reduction in essentially the profit of the company to pay the fine, but it couldn't go into the rates. Have I got that right?
Through the chair, in a general sense, that is correct. There could be perhaps extenuating circumstances, but they would probably be fairly very unusual.
And so, follow up with Mr. Pickett.
Yes.
So, in the current version of the bill, if a utility were to be fined, before they could go and put that fine into their rates, they would have to apply to RCA, and RCA would have to find that it was reasonable to put it in the rates under the circumstances. Where in contrast with this amendment, you would now have a place in which in general fines related to this would be then placed on the ratepayers in their utility rates. Have I got that right?
Yeah, through the chair, I think that is generally correct. And just for clarification purposes, even on the original bill, the RCA has not adopted a position, which we do at public meetings, in a very open and transparent way. And so what you're hearing is my take and from what my experience is with this.
We appreciate that, Mr. Pickett. Thank you.
And so my last question for the bill sponsor. In light of Mr. Pickett's answers, I guess it's a two-part question. Do you have a different understanding of how fines are dealt with today? And if they're dealt with, if you agree they're dealt with that way today, as Mr. Pickett describes, why wouldn't we basically treat fines the same way, which is what's in the current bill versus your amendment?
Through the chair to Representative Clayman, at this point, I'm considering if are there language differences needed for a for-profit versus co-op, or so right now I'm just considering the potential of that.
Yeah. Any follow-up, Representative Clayman?
Not a question, but I would just say the co-ops today, they're lobbyists, and there's one of them. They probably have two or three in the room today. Their lobbyists are not pay down of rates. Their lobbyists are effectively pay down of capital credits, or you could think of those as profits in a traditional corporate structure. And I suppose that seems like a reasonable place where the fines get dealt with. It's not like the co-ops don't have something that in a non-co-op setting would look sort of like profits, but not exactly. Mm-hmm. But I'm pretty comfortable with the notion with the way, because I'm comfortable with the way the bill's drafted, which essentially means you have to go to RCA and apply to say, why should the ratepayers pay? Because it seems that all the utilities have some capacity to absorb fines in their current structure in the same way they can pay lobbyists and they can pay fines today through their current structure.
Brief at ease.
Back on the record, and we are on amendment number 6, and I believe Representative Kaufman, you wanted to jump in the queue here.
Thank you. Yes, in consideration of this discussion and the fact that I and some others will be in the next committee going to withdraw this amendment, and we can try and tighten up the language and for best benefit to the ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. That means amendment number 6 has been withdrawn, bringing us to amendment number 7, also by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, I move amendment number 7.
Object for discussion.
Representative Kaufman.
The intent of this amendment is to simply say that the grid has to be ready and serviceable before the providers can be held accountable. If we were building homes, parking lots, and businesses, and the freeway wasn't ready yet to get people around, it wouldn't work very well. So this amendment is a nod to that reality with respect to the grid needing to be ready and up to speed in order to be able to move power about reliably.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Chair Scroggie. This is, I believe, a needed amendment. I also believe I've talked to the administration, and they think that it's important. And you're saying to yourself right now, you're going, okay, we're talking about a lot of funding, right? Well, I think they understand that, and I think they understand where it's going to need to come from. And so that's why I believe this is a good amendment, and I believe it will happen in the way that they believe it will happen, if that makes sense to you.
It does. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Representative Fields, I thought I saw you catching my eye.
Thanks, Chairman Scroggie. Yeah, I actually don't support this amendment, and the reason is I think we as a state and an ERO have an interest in upgraded transmission, and I think if we pass the RPS bill as written with the amendments we're adopting today, we are going to be accelerating a much more resilient grid, because upgrading that transmission to accommodate renewables has the very positive impact of much greater reliability. And basically what we're going to be enabling is better dispatch from Bradley Lake and from the Dixon Diversion Project. We're going to be enabling better dispatch of increasing deployment of renewables in the Mat-Su Valley. So ratepayers are going to pay for that transmission that is built and upgraded along with the renewable generation. But that's actually a good thing. And I think we're going to see some fuel savings on the one hand. We're going to have some capital costs on the other. Frankly, we would be paying for more transmission anyway because we need a resilient grid. So I don't want to pretend that we can sort of separate transmission from generation, because we can't. They go together. We are going to pay for them as ratepayers, and we're going to achieve some fuel savings along the way. So with that, I'm not going to support the amendment, but I think it's important to recognize that, yeah, we have to build transmission and generation.
Representative Tuck, did I see you trying to get in the queue?
You're really good about watching my facial expressions, trying to figure things out. thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I have one question. Is when administration was referred to, are we talking about the Alaska Energy Authorities that we're referring to?
When you said Representative Rauscher?
Rauscher, when you said administration.
I believe that we're talking about an administration that would like to see it done for them so it doesn't fall on the ratepayers. I think that's what they're looking at. Can I just read something for a second?
Oh, yeah. Please do.
In order to support a realistic chance of reducing the cost of energy, get the utilities to go along, we need to make sure that they have an opportunity to succeed. In order for them to succeed, we have to commit to upgrading the entire rail belt system in terms of transmission lines and making sure that we hook in the rail belt from Fairbanks to Delta and names a bunch of cities, right? So anyway, because of the antiquated transmission lines, of course, that we all know and we all understand, the non-connections that we have, the interties needed, that it's really going to fall hard on the ratepayers if it's not done that way. So I believe that they see a chance for it not to happen that way, and I believe they want to incorporate it.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Rauscher. Representative Fields.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just want to make a couple more comments on the nuances of this issue of transmission generation in this particular amendment. I think as members are probably aware from discussion with utilities in the AE list, there are transmission upgrades that are needed both between the interior and South Central and Anchorage, MEA, and Homer. So one concern I would have about an amendment like this is it would prevent implementation of a needed RPS that could benefit Anchorage and MEA. You know, we could have transmission upgrades, generation upgrades, battery energy storage system upgrades just between MEA and Homer, for example, before the transmission upgrades occurred between MEA and GVA, just to give an example. That could still be a good thing for South Central consumers, I think. So I don't think we want to wait until the last inch of transmission has been improved, recognizing that each marginal improvement of transmission can enable additional deployment of renewables and storage. And, you know, that incremental progress is really important. I also want to note that there are some decisions that we can make in terms of capital budget. There may be federal infrastructure funding opportunities. I like kind of driving AEA and the administration and us to look for those opportunities to bring in additional money to build some of these transmission upgrades and protect ratepayers. So I think we can do both of those while keeping an RPS in place.
And I'd like to just jump in the queue to align myself with Representative Fields' comments on this issue. And unfortunately, I won't be able to support this amendment, but I do appreciate it being offered. Is there further discussion on Amendment Number 7? Very good. Is the objection maintained?
Yes.
I don't understand how you can think they can arrive at any of this without it.
Representative Rauscher, I appreciate the concern, and I think it's a little bit of a, you know, chicken or the egg. I think they both need to be done. Just my personal view, and I think that this bill will drive those transmission upgrades. I'm seeing Representative Kaufman jumping back in the queue.
Question through the chair to those that object to this amendment in its present form. Do you see any alterations that might be made to it in order to help keep the focus on improving the grid, but provide the flexibility that is being discussed?
I'm not sure I have an answer to that off the bat, Representative Kaufman, but it looks like Representative Fields wants to respond, and then we'll go to Representative Tuck.
Thanks. I'm hoping that maybe in working with the administration, we could get NREL to do some further analysis on capital costs and savings, and that would include sort of a more updated number on the capital costs of transmission. The AEA numbers, I think, are a good starting point, but maybe not the most current, so that more advanced NREL analysis, which could occur over the summer, would give us greater understanding of the cost of transmission versus the cost of generation and the fuel savings costs that some of those capital costs enable. So I think we can gain greater understanding of it, but to me, transmission and generation are both capital costs that we're going to incur, and frankly, we would be incurring transmission costs even if we didn't deploy another megawatt hour of renewable generation, because we need that grid resiliency.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the existing exemption in the bill basically looks at all the portfolio that meets the clean energy standard by saying meets or exceeds the aggregate of the clean energy standard. Of all that is on, that is interconnected, that part of the interconnected electrical energy transmission network. And then what this amendment does is replaces that with until the transmission network has been unconstrained and upgraded. Is that the primary difference between? Is this what this amendment is doing? It's really a question to through the chair, Representative Kaufman.
Representative Kaufman.
Through the chair, to Representative Tuck. Yes, it's saying that the grid is, you know, the essential delivery system to allow that. I don't know if this is the term transmission to occur. If I understand the question.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fields and then Representative Rauscher.
Just to Representative Tuck's question, I know it's not the intent of the amendment, but I think if we require full deployment of all the transmission before deploying the renewable generation, we're actually going to put more costs on consumers without the offsetting savings of generation. For example, if we're deploying, let's just say wind and solar and battery energy storage in South Central while we're doing the transmission upgrades, we're allowing consumers to reap the benefits of that wind and solar while we are eating some of the cost of transmission, and that's probably better for consumers than doing all the transmission first.
Representative, let's go to Representative Rauscher and then to Representative Kaufman.
So my question is the original bill, whose was it?
It was the governor's bill, Representative Rauscher.
And if the administration if it's put on the administration to make sure that it works, and the levy is on the administration to provide the transmission lines, for it to happen, they're going to have to come through. It's their bill.
I'm not sure if that's a statement in support or against the amendment, Representative Brower. It's a
statement for the amendment.
Okay.
This is where the money's coming from, is them to build the transmission lines. If they want this percentages to work out and they want to see it achieved because it will bring down the ratepayers' rates, which is what I believe they're after, they're going to have to come up with the transmission lines to make it happen with this amendment. That's my position, and I figured the representative from IUEW over there would be just jolly about this ideology here. But that's just opinion. I don't want to have to speak with him.
I might briefly respond, Representative Rauscher, that I think part of the concern is that there's no mandate that the transmission be built, and without the transmission, this amendment would allow the entire standard to be invalidated or unenforceable. And so if you have the mandate on the development of the resources, then that will drive the necessity for the administration and for us to make those investments in transmission. That's just my perspective, though. I'd now like to turn to the amendment sponsor, who has patiently waited for his turn in the queue, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, back to got a couple points now. So but back to the discussion with Representative Fields. It's not that nothing would happen until the grid is complete, but it's a recognition that we can't hold people accountable for transmission if the grid is not up to speed. And so that's really the intent of this, is to say, you know, basically the road has to be built before you can move things around. And it's really just acknowledging that reality. But that's not that other things would not be happening in other subset areas, but just that an entity,
a timetable to me.
Just that an entity couldn't be held responsible if their part of the grid was preventing them from doing so.
Very good. Representative Fields, were you in the queue?
I think Representative Klayman was first, but if I could get in the queue after that.
Representative Klayman.
I just want to respond to some comments from Representative Rauscher. First, although I appreciate Representative Tuck's affiliation with the IBEW, I think he represents a different constituency than the IBEW.
I think they'll benefit highly.
But I would administrations come and go, and so the impact of this is going to, you know, we're talking about standards that go to 2050, and so for those that think every governor will be elected to two terms, there's a lot of governors' administrations coming between now and 2050, and so I have a hard time taking on the fact that this administration says they want to make an investment. I don't see that binding on anything else on the next administration. So oddly enough, your comments about the administration says they're taking it on, I don't find that as a very compelling reason to support the amendment. I do appreciate the concept, but I think the amendment is not really ready, and I think there's will be another committee. So I'm not going to support the amendment. I see arguments both ways, but I'm not sold on either one of them.
Okay, and just really quickly before we go to Representative Fields, my astute and knowledgeable chief of staff has pointed out to me that on page 6, line 8, there is an opportunity for fines to be waived for transmission network constraints that prevent the load-serving entity from partially or fully using renewable electrical energy for net electricity sales, for what it's worth. All right. With that, I'd like to go to Representative Fields.
Thanks, Chairman Shragi. Just wanted to follow up on Representative Rauscher's comments. It's not actually the administration that's on the hook here to deploy the generation and transmission. It's the Electrical Reliability Organization, which is going to plan deployment of these assets through an integrated resource plan, and they're already doing the integrated resource planning under the legislation that we passed in the previous session. So that is the long-term implementation that is going to transcend administrations, fortunately. And, you know, they're going to deploy the transmission and generation in a logical way because they're looking at it rail belt wide, thanks to that previous legislation we passed.
I'll call the previous question.
Excuse.
Let's go to Representative Kaufman just briefly, and then I think we'll be ready for action.
I think we've been on this a while.
Well noted. Thank you, Representative.
All right, I'll withdraw my call of
previous. Thank you, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative Clayman. Yes, but it's such a worthy discussion. I think in view of this conversation, and in that I have another opportunity in the next committee of referral, I will withdraw this amendment, perhaps refine it a bit. It's good, and I thank you. Is it Senator Johnson?
Governor here.
Okay. I thank the governor for pointing that out. It's good, but I think we may need more clarity before we're done with this one. So with that, I withdraw amendment number 7.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman, and very good discussion indeed, even if we are wearing Representative Clayman's patience a little thin. That brings us to amendment number 8 by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, thank you. I move amendment number 8.
Track for discussion. Would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you. So the intent of this is, again, to point out that, you know, reliability is task number one, especially in a place with our climate. It's just inserting this language that compliance with the Clean Energy Standard would preclude the local load-serving entity from meeting an applicable reliability standard. It's just the emphasis is on reliability. I'm aware of the tale of two countries I sometimes refer to when we're discussing green energy, and that's the difference between what France did and what Germany did. And it's a clear distinction between those chasing a similar goal, but going about it two ways, one that precluded reliability, and now Germany is beholden to Russian gas when France has, through their decisions, remained a net energy exporter. So if we were going to pick a model, we want to pick one, you know, reliability cost where that's key, that's our driver in consideration of our pursuit of cleaner sources of power. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Oh, I hadn't raised my hand, but happy to address it. I'm going to oppose this amendment. I think the existing ERO structure that demands reliability is an appropriate venue to make sure that we maintain reliability as we deploy an RPS. And I don't want to sort of micromanage the relationship between reliability and an RPS as envisioned by this amendment.
All right. Further discussion from the committee. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that was a really good example, France and Germany, in looking at the reliability. I know that when Germany started coming up with their policies, France started building up their nuclear capabilities, knowing that they're going to be able to export that energy over to Germany. And so just two different approaches, two different reactions that would happen in Japan. And so I think that this was a really good example. Thank you.
Very good. Further discussion on amendment number 8? Not seeing any. Is the objection maintained?
I'll maintain the objection because I know one person is going to, at least one person is going to vote no.
And with that, I would like to ask the secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Cup?
Yes.
Representative Clayman?
Pass.
Representative Fields?
No.
Representative Rauscher?
Yes.
Representative Kaufman?
Yes.
Representative Shoggy?
No.
Representative Clayman?
No.
3 nays, 3 yays.
I believe that was no.
Tie, so done.
Yep, very good. Amendment number 8 fails to be adopted. That brings us to amendment number 9. By Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
I move amendment number 9.
Object for discussion. Representative Kaufman, would you like to explain your amendment?
Thank you. This amendment essentially inserts a new section driving a review of clean energy technologies and assuring that essentially that they're up to speed, that we're staying abreast of developments and employing or deploying the appropriate technology for compliance.
Thank you, Representative Kaufman. Representative Fields.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I like the concept of this amendment and just wanted to check with you or your staff to see about your take on whether there are refinements necessary to the drafting or whether it's ready to go.
let's first go to my chief of staff, Ryan Johnston, and then I'll offer some comments as well.
For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff to Representative Shragi. This is above my pay grade.
Very good, Mr. Johnston. I'll take a stab at that. So I have a couple thoughts. First being that I'm not sure if the commission is the appropriate place for this to go. I frankly think that the AEA might be the better organization to review these technologies, as they are the Alaska Energy Authority and have quite a bit of experience and knowledge already built up in this area. So I think that would be my first thought on this amendment, is that it would be better mandated that the AEA do this sort of reporting. I would also be curious to know the RCA's take on this amendment and how that would impact them. But does that initial answer satisfy your question, Representative Fields? Very good. Is there further discussion on this amendment from committee members? Okay, not seeing any further discussion on amendment number 9. Is the objection maintained, Representative Klayman?
Cool. Could I actually ask you a question?
Yeah, Representative Fields. Yep.
Thanks. Since you mentioned it, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Mr. Pickett could comment on his view about whether the RCA or the AEA is the more appropriate entity to do this technology review.
Mr. Pickett, could you please respond?
I think either agency, through the chair, I believe either agency could do it, and that's just going to be a policy call by the legislature.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Pickett. And maybe to tag on to Representative Fields' question, I assume that an approved renewable energy resource, the definition of, or the standards for a renewable energy resource to be approved, that would go through the rulemaking process. Would that be a correct assumption?
That would be correct.
Okay. Further discussion from committee members? Did I see a hand go up? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We did adopt amendment number 2. Is it number 2? Yeah, I know we did, but I'm trying to figure out which one I wanted to look at.
Do you like a brief at ease?
Yeah, brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's amendment number 5 I was actually trying to find. That one there. As we're looking at the commission will be looking at our clean energy standards and our rates of reliability, and making sure that what we're doing is consistent with the public interest. Amendment number 9 appears to me that it is looking at, in advance at technologies that are out there. And looking at those standards, looking at those new technologies to see what the capabilities and possibilities are. I know we have the Renewable Energy Grant Fund that I think does a lot of this already with Alaska Energy Authority. I'm just not sure. I mean, even though I know the RCA is standing by, willing to do and ready to do whatever we ask them to do. But I almost think that a lot of this is already being performed with AEA, and it might be better to consolidate this with AEA so we get that report. So without knowing any further roles and responsibilities of the differences between the two, that's my opinion at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Kaufman, did I see you trying to get in the queue?
No, okay. I was.
Very good. Representative Klayman?
I appreciate the reminder to go back and look at amendment number 5. This is actually an instance in which I think this is don't like this amendment because it feels like it's getting too much government in the way of competition. I think the question about what are the best renewable technologies that are out there is something that I'd rather have the utilities exploring that and not have the RCA trying to take the lead. I think they've got enough on their plate. So I don't support the amendment. I think we should let the market drive this and not government.
All right. Sensing that the objection will be maintained, I'd like to ask the record secretary to please call the roll on amendment number 9.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Representative Kaufman?
Considering the discussion and that I will once again have another bite at the apple, I'll withdraw this for now, and maybe we can look at combining that language or optimizing it some other way. So
appreciate the flexibility. Thank you.
I withdraw amendment number 9.
All right, amendment number 9 has been withdrawn. That brings us to amendment number 10, and I believe this is by Representative Tuck.
Yes, thank you.
Is that right?
Yes.
Would you like to move your amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number 10.
Okay. Check for discussion.
Representative Tuck, would you explain your amendment?
Yes, thank you. In looking at the definitions of renewable energy, let's see what page is that on. That is page 7, line 8. Underneath definitions, clean energy credit means one credit equal to the generation attributes to 1 megawatt hour that is derived from renewable energy resource. So under renewable energy resource, I was looking to add nuclear into our definitions of technologies that we can apply when looking at taking advantage of what this bill is doing. And so it brings in E on, if you look on page 3 of the amendment, line number 26, it adds E. But to do that, I had to change it from renewable energy resource to looking at alternative electrical energy. And basically it is to meet the same goals that I hope we all have, and that is to have reliable, safe energy using alternative means to provide that actually is beneficial to the ratepayer and is actually beneficial to our environment. And when you look at the nuclear technologies, there is a new environmental movement behind nuclear technologies because of the fact that when you compare it to other technologies and you look at the supply chain of providing those other energy generation means. Nuclear is really long, it's sustainable, it uses very little waste over a longer period of time, it's a huge concentration of power, and it actually offers a lot of, especially with the microreactors, it offers relief to ratepayers, especially in rural Alaska. So I don't want us to inadvertently forget about this option. And so this is what amendment number 10 hopes to do.
Okay, further discussion on amendment number 10.
Good question, I think, for Mr. Johnston.
Representative Klayman.
Through the chair, I know there's been talk about going from renewable energy to clean energy in the course of the bill. How does alternative energy relate to that whole discussion?
For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff representative Shragi. Before the meeting, I put on members' desks a breakdown generated from Representative Rauscher's question from last time on a breakdown of states that either have an RPS, a clean energy standard, or potentially both. So there's 30 states that either have one or both, or one or the other. So just wanted to let members know about that. And just for providing the conversation, so this section has currently, before the amendment, has a definition for renewable electrical energy from a renewable energy resource. So that definition is where anything provided in this section will go to look to see if it falls within that. So I don't think that – I haven't seen an alternative energy standard throughout the United States, but we are here in Alaska and we like to do things our own way. So there's no reason that it shouldn't be called that. But I think the critical part of this is to ensure that the definition contains what should or should not be allowed to be used as part of the standard. So I think it's a policy call for the committee and
for the legislature, I think the meat of the issue is ensuring that the definitions themselves are include what the policymakers would like to be counted towards the alternative energy standard in this case.
Okay, further discussion from committee members. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think that we need to be careful from locking ourselves into something that can't deliver. Again, reliability, cost, all of that is paramount. And I think of, you know, renewable is very narrow. And so we have to look at what our goal is. Is it you know, cleaner than we are today, and by what measure, but always with reliability there. And I think whether it's clean or alternative, whatever the term is, what's important is that it allows us to consider systems that may be more focused on the deliverable, which is reliability and cost. Thank you.
Representative Fields and then Representative Klayman.
Thanks to the chair. Just a question for Representative Tuck. Does he have a strong preference between alternative or clean?
Representative Tuck.
Thank you. Through the chair. Actually, I don't. I was just looking for a term that would capture, because I don't believe that renewable energy resource, I don't think it captures some of these other items that we have in here right now. And as the Chief of Staff Johnson had pointed out, is that if you look at top of page eight, that's where we have renewable energy resources, which it means. So all we're doing is adding E to that. But when you look at, B. So if I may, Mr. Chair.
Representative, please.
Representative Fields, B, we put in low emission. I think the reason why we put in low emission because we want to make sure it's clean. Yeah. Apparently not all biomass is clean. I mean, if you look at, clean might work for even the clean coal power plant that we have up there in Healy as well. So I'm okay with it. Alternative also works. If you want to put the emphasis that we don't want to damage or hurt the environment in doing so, that makes a lot of sense. When you look at wind, solar, geothermal, those to me are truly renewable. When you get into waste heat recovery and biomass, solid, liquid, or those you have to continue fueling. You have to continually put an input in. You don't with hydrothermal, wave, tidal, river in stream, and hydropower. Once you got those set up, they should be continually going. The other ones, you have to physically add something into it. And so that's the reason why, even though we're using the term right now renewable, I don't see that how that even fits existingly right now. So I was just looking for some way of capturing what our goal was.
Okay. Representative Klayman.
I just was looking further down through the amendment stack, and I see amendment number 11 essentially does what, by adding nuclear to page 8, which is kind of, it appears to me exactly what you're doing on page 3 of amendment 10, and recognizing that it doesn't sound like Representative Tuck is completely wedded to alternative is the language. I'm going to move to table amendment 10 and take up so we can take up amendment 11, because if we approve amendment 11, then I think the clarity that nuclear to be considered is accomplished by number 11 without doing as much of a major change in the bill. And I do have some concerns about having a definition that is inconsistent with any of the other states. I like the idea that we're either renewable or clean. So I've moved to table amendment 10 so we can discuss amendment 11 first.
Any objection to tabling amendment number 10?
Yes.
Okay. There's an objection to tabling amendment number 10.
To the objection.
Yes, please do. Representative Tuck.
Yes, we can. I don't want to stop the debate because when we look at renewable energy versus alternative electrical energy, I think you can very, very clearly say that nuclear does not fall underneath that definition. So I think we do need to address it if we're going to take on nuclear as an option.
Is this debatable?
We'll make it debatable. Representative Fields.
Why don't I withdraw your motion?
I'll withdraw my motion to table.
Okay.
But I did want to be interested in this discussion.
Yes.
Okay, with amendment number, with the motion to table amendment number 10 being withdrawn, is there further discussion on amendment number 10, Representative Fields? Did your hand go up?
I need to look at this side once in a while. My hand's been up quite a while.
Representative Kaufman might have been before me, but I'm just getting cute.
Yes. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Tuck, just want to say I appreciate your comments. It's where I'm at, too, although it's my amendment number 11. I appreciate. So that was sounding good for a minute, but if I can get your 10 in there, I'm more than happy. And I actually I like the fact that we're addressing that language difference and the concept difference that is behind that, which is what's right for Alaska. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Further discussion on amendment number 10. Looking at you, George. Representative Klayman. Okay, Representative Fields.
I agree with Representative Klayman that Amendment 11 is just a little more cleanly worded, and I think some of the contents that Representative Tuck once included, namely biomass, are included in renewable. So I think we're going to get in the sources you want to get in.
Okay. Not seeing any further discussion. You were. Okay. Yeah, thank you. Representative Klayman. Sorry, I'm looking at the right side of the table. Representative Klayman.
In light of Representative Tuck's comment that he doesn't think renewable includes nuclear, if I got that right,
Representative Tuck?
Yeah. Some would argue that. And that's, I was just trying to make it so that argument was removed. And we also can look at others down the road, others than just renewable, looking at all alternative methods.
But as a follow-up question with Representative Tuck is, do you think that clean energy covers nuclear? The objection you have to renewable doesn't apply if the language were clean energy.
Through the chair, I represent Klayman, and actually I was in agreement with that. I was just explaining how I came up with alternative. I'm not in disagreement with the clean energy.
Right.
And I know this does go to the representative next to me's committee soon. I just wanted to make sure that we were encapsulating what we were hoping to accomplish by that terminology change. That's the only reason why.
So I would move a conceptual amendment to change everything in Amendment 10 that says alternative energy, change that all to say clean energy.
And right. We have a conceptual amendment to replace alternative with clean in each of the instances in Amendment number 10, of which there are many. There's an objection from Representative Rauscher. Would you like to speak to your objection? Is there any discussion on conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 10? Representative Kaufman.
If we could we hear the definition of clean again? Let's just discuss that a bit before we agree to this change.
I don't know if anyone wants to address that. I'm happy to. Just from my time working on this bill and discussions with stakeholders, clean generally includes anything that's not high emissions, oil and gas, kind of standard high carbon impact fuels. So typically it's included nuclear as well as renewables, and then low emission biomass is my understanding. But if committee members would like to add on to that, Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see this as a friendly amendment. Had I thought of clean myself, I would have gone with clean. I just didn't think of it. And so I do see this, but I think that's part of our goal. Part of our goal is to reduce carbon emissions at the same time as providing cheaper power and reliable power. I think it works very well.
And to follow up on that, Representative Tuck, to follow up on my prior comments, you know, the definition of clean energy is going to be defined within the bill as well. So with the, if assuming we were to adopt amendment number 11, and I don't know the will of the committee on that, nuclear would then be included under, along with the rest of the resources that are listed there in the definition section. All right, Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted it discussed.
Very good. Thank you. Further discussion on conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 10. Representative Rauscher, is your objection maintained to the conceptual? All right. Objections maintained. Would the Secretary please call the roll on conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 10?
Representative Fields.
Yes.
Representative Rauscher.
No.
Representative Kaufman.
Yes.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative Klayman.
Yes.
Representative Shragi.
Yes.
5 yeas, 1 nay.
All right, with 5 yeas, 1 nay, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 10 has been adopted. That brings us back to the underlying amendment number 10. Is there further discussion on amendment number 10? Representative Klayman.
Just a brief comment. I really appreciate all the discussion about nuclear energy and whether Alaska is going to go in that direction. I think that's it's going to be a long discussion. And I know there's different views. I have to say I'm pretty undecided on that topic, but I think it's appropriate to have nuclear in the list of alternatives to consider so that it's fairly on the table. Whether or not we choose to go that route is a secondary question to this. So I'm happy to support the amendment.
Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, I think it's important if we have a solid energy source and we can run it in a clean way that it be an acceptable tool in our toolkit. There may be technology for hydrocarbons that greatly reduces the emissions from, let's say, burning natural gas. And so I just don't. We need to look at the whole of our resources, what we can do to provide, reliability, good rates, and at a cleaner level than what we're doing now. So I think it's good that we keep looking at that more holistic picture rather than fall into the Germany model. Let's be France instead. Thank you.
And I would remove my objection.
Very good. Is there further objection to amendment number 10 as amended?
Are we voting on conceptual amendment?
No, that has already been adopted. We just did a roll call vote on that.
No, is that the conceptual to the conceptual?
Nope. Brief it is. Back on the record. We are on amendment number 10 as amended. Is there further discussion on amendment number 10? Representative Fields.
I'm not objecting to passage of the amendment. I guess I just want to note I've heard concern about adding nuclear to a clean energy standard from some people, opposition from others. I just want to note that the pricing I've seen on nuclear energy is more than 2.5 times more expensive than renewable energy that is being deployed. So I don't have an objection to adding it because it could get cheaper in the future, and then maybe we want to deploy it. I don't think adding it now is going to inhibit deployment of renewable energy because renewable energy is cheaper right now. So I think it's fine to add, and we're going to see renewable energy deployment, whether we add nuclear to the standard or not.
Very good. Further discussion on amendment number 10 as amended. Not seeing any further discussion. I actually believe the objection was withdrawn by Representative Klayman. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Is there further objection to amendment number 10 as amended? Not hearing any. Amendment number 10 has been adopted. That brings us to amendment number 11 by Representative Kaufman. Would you like to move your amendment?
Thank you. Through the chair, in view of the adoption of amendment 10, I'll withdraw amendment number 11. I'm losing my voice. Thank
you. Saves you from a dilatory objection.
All right. Amendment number 11 has been withdrawn. Some wonderful discussion today, even if it's resulted in Representative Kaufman losing his voice. With no further amendments, that brings us to the underlying bill. Is there further discussion on HB 301? Seeing no further discussion, Representative Klayman, I'd like to entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 301, version 32-GH2546-G, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note from committee.
We've got an objection from Representative Rauscher. Would the Secretary please call the roll?
Representative Fields?
Yes.
Representative Rauscher?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Kaufman?
Yes.
Representative Buck?
Yes.
Representative Klayman?
Yes.
Representative Shrock?
Yes.
5 yeas, 1 nay.
All right, with 5 yeas, 1 nay, House Bill 301, as amended, moves from committee. I'd like to ask members to remain in the room after the hearing to sign the committee report. And with nothing else to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 11:52 a.m.